program.
Greetings, programs!
Oh, Lord.
You sound like a psycho computer. Welcome to another episode of the Sci-Fi Party Line. This is your hostess, Kat. I have Carl with me, and Will is back.
Hello.
What's happening?
Oh, and today we are talking about Tron.
Okay, calm your geek down.
Any kind of program, sir. He's a user.
Okay.
Are you going to snort, too? I mean, come on. Okay, I don't know. I love this movie.
You hated the movie.
I loved it. I walked out, and I loved it.
Really? All right, Kat.
I loved it.
Okay, all right. Quickly around the horn. Kat loved it. I loved it. Carl?
I loved it as well. Yes.
Well, you were saying, like, you didn't love it. When I said I loved it, you said,
No. It's like any young child, you, as an adult, you absolutely adore and love your children, but you can't see the flaws. And there are
a few.
They're pretty big, but there are a few flaws in the movie.
All over, I said I liked the movie. I didn't say I liked everything. We are going to get into some of those flaws. Well, actually, I want you to go first. Will, you know, if anybody doesn't remember, he works with special effects, like professionally. So,
I have worked professionally.
Do it. And, you know, Carl, he does that stuff. He knows more about that stuff than, say, like I would. I've done some of that stuff in school, which is why I can follow the conversation in which y'all talking about. So, we all have a little bit of background here.
Okay.
Them more than I. So, let's get into some of the things. First, I want to talk about is kind of the face of Clue. How was that done?
It was done actually very simply, I was kind of surprised at. Because when I first saw the thing and the helmet opened and there was Jeff Bridges from 1995. What is that? It blew my ass off. Because it was really cool. I mean, okay, this is where we get into the uncanny valley. And
yeah, that's all I could think about when I was watching it.
Quickly explain this. This means every time you get more technical, more that aspect in what you're trying to do, you get farther and farther away from actually being that thing you're trying to become, a human being in that imagery. Which is a problem. They've had it in a lot of things. They had it in Avatar, but they overcame
it. Wasn't as bad. Yeah, I think
it,
they...
It was because, not as bad in Avatar. Mm-hmm.
Because, and I will state this every time, because they stylized the characters.
Yeah.
And that's how you get around it. You go, okay, we're really, really realistic, but you know what we're doing? We're changing it. We're changing it enough so that it looks not what you're expecting. And that tricks us into going, oh, well, that's a Na'vi.
That's how the Na'vi move their face. That's how they,
exactly.
Thing.
Yeah. Any flaw in how the movement goes is, oh, well, that's just how Na'vi are in our heads. I mean, just in our little lizard brains, we go, oh, well, that's okay then. As you do humans, you get more and more, it's more and more abstract. I picked up the Tron Legacy Art of book. Art of it's out there. It's out there, but they put it out 3 months ago. So So that means I think they put the imagery in it 6 months ago. So none of it is like very advanced. It's all the old. It's a lot of really good stills and a lot of really neat pieces. And there are two paragraphs basically how they explain how it was done. The thing with Jeff Bridges. And basically what it came down to was the magical people at Digital Domain really did a good job at it, didn't they? And that was it. There was absolutely no data, nothing at all. The only information I found about this is in the Wired magazine article on Tron.
Okay, all right.
And basically what it is they had a guy about the same height as Jeff Bridges, and they basically They marked, you know, they marked off his face. He gave all the lines and everything, and they just did a digital replacement on his face.
Y'all remember that movie where it's a game movie, and it was all animated, and at the end, it was kind of, I think, a zombie movie, but it was all, you know, special effects. And
you
at the
Final Fantasy, the
yeah,
movie?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
I thought, all I could think about was, that face looks like the faces from that movie, and it has an advance. Sure, Clue looked compelling, but every time I saw him, his lips didn't move right with the cheeks, and it was good,
mm-hmm,
but it just wasn't quite there.
Yeah, I think what it comes down to is in part of the technology that they used in Avatar, basically the facial that rig where they would put a ring, you know, they would attach to the man's head,
yeah,
cameras looking at his face, and as he moved his face, it would, you know, movement of the face would make phonemes, which would then be translated into, you know, the audio, and then you link the two together. Wow, look, we can do that. The problem between doing that then on his body then from his face now is his face now, those points have moved. His face is, you know, he's an older individual. His face is a little heavier. It's a little more slack. He's probably 20 pounds heavier.
And when you're talking about, you know, the uncanny valley, that, I mean, that is the real point. But the other thing is, there are very subtle movements that are going on human faces all of the time,
yeah,
that you don't really notice. You know, there are twitches, there's movements of the skin, all that kind of stuff that... When you're trying to create this stuff in a computer, you know, you're doing something called interpolation, which means, you know, you're smoothing out the movement from one point to another of the points that are on your face. Well, right, all the teeny little muscles that are inside of a human face, they twitch and they move around, and it's totally, you don't see it, but if something is wrong about it, you can pick it up right away.
The smallest of imperfections,
and it is small,
just screams out to you, oh my God, he's fake, mm-hmm, you know, because mm-hmm, you, I mean, basically, you know, they're talking, well, those zombie people, and I'm like, what? And the other thing I have to say about this is, there are about 7 or 8 shots, just, you know, shots of him where he turns his head or something, or he,
and
you know,
he
turns his head and says something, and you can,
and you,
like,
can't tell, you can't,
exactly,
tell.
It, yeah, a chill is going on my back going, oh my God, that's so perfect.
Yeah.
I never got that. Every time I saw him, it was the tongue didn't move right in the mouth, the lips didn't move right, the cheek didn't go up in the proper form. It drove me nuts. However, at the same time, I thought it was good. I was like, we've never seen this before like this on a face.
Exactly. No, exactly. I mean, Benjamin Button, they did some of this, but a lot of that was...
Oh, I didn't see that.
Yeah, and a lot of what they ended up doing with Benjamin Button is they actually took Brad Pitt in a background and, like, recorded his whole face, and then put him in makeup, recorded his whole face, and then put him in you know composited it together, and it worked okay. Mm-hmm. This was Jeff Bridges doing a very good you know, performance that they then capture. It's performance capture. Ooh, it's more than rotoscoping. It's performance capture. No, it's actually rotoscoping is the problem. But I think what it comes down to, and I'm not saying, you know, the guys who did Tron Legacy, I know a couple of these people, and they're stalwart individuals, and they don't phone it in. These guys, you know, go out there and they, you know, they hit as hard as they can and they see it too, trust me, they see it too.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the problems you get into is you could touch it all you want, but it doesn't get any better, because even with all the work you put into it, because it's an impossible, it's a problem without a solution.
Yeah, but do you think they can get more information if they just put more plot points on the face? That's what it looked like. They just didn't have enough plot points. But I'm pretty sure if they added like a million more, it'd still be weird.
Exactly. See, that's it. It's how much effort you put into the operation tell. It's like, okay, so they put five. So let's just taking your example. They put 10 points on his face, right? And then it's okay. Well, let's put 20 points on his face.
Okay, how many points did they put though?
Do you know? I think I'm not sure, but I think upwards of 70. But that sounds right
because I'm thinking about Avatar, all those little dots.
Exactly.
Have
yeah.
Okay, so but many more.
But what I'm saying is, okay, so you double the amount of dots, but the effective output, how much better is it? Is maybe 5%. So then you double them again, and then the increase is like
70 plot points. I mean, if you're thinking about, but if they put the points, maybe the points are too big at this point in the technology, and like if you had like maybe a bunch of lasers or something, you can really get.
Well, yeah, exactly. You're absolutely right. If you scan him every second, it's possible.
Also, you say it's a plot point and a scan and a plot point and a scan.
That's not what I'm saying. That's not.
Oh, that's not okay.
You're not listening to what I'm saying. I'm saying you put X amount of effort into it, right? And you get Y amount of output. If you double the input of plot points, information, data, you don't get twice the data out. Oh. It drops, it goes down. So as you get more points, you're actually getting less points, less data per point.
For those at home, it is the square of the amount of effort that you put in that you get out. Please continue.
Okay, thank you.
This isn't a square, it's the square. Yeah,
that's what I said, yeah, the square.
Okay, I see what you're saying. Whatever, I don't know. Math.
Okay. I don't know, it's math. Okay, well, let's, move on from the face.
Well, one last thing about this. Is I'm currently working to do some stuff my own, and I'm trying to decide what choices to make. Where should I go? Should I go with realism? Should I go like this? Da da da. I'm looking at all this. I saw two trailers before the movie. They showed Mars Needs Moms the trailer for that, and it's like, no.
Yeah.
No.
Although it is better than the train one. It's better than the train one they made. So.
The train one was 8 years ago.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That was better than that, at least.
It's better. Yes, but it's not eight times as better. You know what I'm saying?
It is the square of the time.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. So the ultimate thing was, it's too much effort. And even if you put as many people as you could, for as long as you could, well, they didn't have as long as you could, but you got as many people behind it, money. This production was not a $5 production. Mm. You know, it was a big deal, and they put every effort behind it, and they blew it. They did. They missed badly.
You're saying Tron?
Yeah. I mean, not saying the effects, just saying this aspect of the effects. And it was blown back. I mean, it's blown, but they did the best that they can do.
But it was Clue,
Tron, and Flynn in those shots, when the three CGI arrows.
Tron looked better.
Yeah.
But we didn't get close-ups of him, though. So there were a couple.
I liked the idea of Tron. I really did. And that was Boxlightner in there too, so he was in those shots. But it's not.
I saw Tron in the background, but it was so quick. I didn't think they put as much time and effort into him because his face kind of looked like it was projected on glass more than they did. No, I'm serious. They're like back projected on a cloudy piece of glass versus the detail that they put into the
food. Are you telling me they got those clouds out of a cloud chamber?
You get a little milk in the
warm water and you film it really fast. That's not.
No, you put the projector through it though.
Right. Well, you have to because then you backwind it and you scratch the film and then you run it through and.
it's classical school. That's classical.
I know, man. No,
I think they kind of fudged it on Tron's face, which, by the way, is why his head was literally a black helmet for the entire rest of the
movie. I know, because I didn't know it was him. He was in the movie at all until they kept saying, and I was like, oh, okay, now he's in the movie. But where did he come from? Was he at the beginning? What? And so, yeah. We only knew him because his circles were different. So
he had the little T square of T's right on the front of his chest. No. I was like, oh no, he did. He had the T-shaped squares right under his neck, and he had the turning arrows right on his chest. So that was Tron, turning arrows and T. And I had to learn this so I could pick him out. Is what that's the only reason. No, that's Squiggle. No, that's a fishbowl on the head. And oh, crossing turn signals. There's Tron.
So what did y'all think? Was the movie, other than the face thing that really bothered me? I thought the movie was really pretty and really beautiful and so 80s, and I love the 80s. And after seeing this, I was like, oh, I was born in the best decade, you know? I thought, it's just, Carl, take that one.
Shoot, you know I was loving the 80s. I adore the 80s. And see, I was very concerned about your opinion of this movie because, you know, I'm with you, Will. When you have been so close, because I saw the original Tron in the theater.
Kids. I didn't know, man.
So that's just how you know, old school here.
Yeah.
And
yes.
So the connection that I had with the original movie, with the era that it came from, totally clouded. Let me tell you, I got to tell you, my favorite part of this movie is when he enters the arcade. When Sam goes in the arcade, all right? He pops on the power, and the jukebox kicks on.
Oh yeah,
and the same way in the movie. Music. Yeah.
No, but look, what is so beautiful? I mean, not only was the choice of music great, but kids, let me tell you what it was like going to the arcade.
Oh god! All
right, that just started pumping in the background. So you had Journey
back
going.
Back in my day.
All of the sounds of the arcade games firing up. And I mean, those were the authentic sounds of the, you know, I heard some Frogger, I heard some Pac-Man back there. I could pick out, you know, just a little tweak.
Defender, Joust, Pac-Man.
Oh man, Joust, you know, Centipede, all that stuff coming in there. Ooh. And so as he's walking through there, it took me back to when I was in the arcade. And I remember the first time I heard Pat Benatar while I was playing Defender. All right, I mean, let me tell you, the highest point, tear it up in Defender with Pat Benatar in the background. It just made for the whole experience. So when they had Journey and the Eurythmics going,
when Eurythmics kicked in in my theater, a bunch of people start laughing.
it was
glorious.
So perfect.
Yeah, it was cool. It was amazing. Yeah, like you know. Tron, the original thing. I mean, users, hello. That was a term that was coined in the film.
Mm-hmm.
The whole thing about being scanned by a laser into the computer. Hey, that's what we're doing now to these actors. We're scanning people's bodies into the computer to manipulate them. Hello, it's a future. Welcome to it. But it's, you know, I swear to God, the reason I'm in effects, I love computers and I love computer effects today, is because of Tron. If Tron didn't exist, I wouldn't do this.
Listen, I am into robotics and machine intelligence, and the first time I imagined a program of mine as an avatar inside of the world as a computer was after Tron. When I saw, and it didn't click, and it was actually Clue in the original Tron movie that really clicked the idea that when you sit down in front of your computer, and you create a piece of software, a piece of you is in that software, and it is an extension, a separate entity of you living and breathing inside of a machine. When I saw, because I remember the line, when I saw it the first time, I said, you're the best little program I've written, you're dogged and relentless, let me at him, you know, it glues inside the computer.
That's what they do.
Executing the program that Flynn had created. And I got home after that, and because I'd been programming, you know, before I saw Tron, but the idea of a piece of me embodied in software and running loose inside of the machine, that's where it just sort of all came together. So I have a very, you know, passionate connection with the server at work. I install servers at work. My workforce is called Clue. It's been in there for a while. No one knew why I called it Clue.
Oh no.
People are you working with?
Now they come and they go, Tron, huh?
Okay. Yeah.
finally. I said, you're only, what, 25 years late, buddy. I could have
Hello. Yeah, but I, you know, the thing, I love the old movie is dated, but if you
yes.
look at and you see the visionary, see, the thing is, watching it as an adult, watching it as a person who watched the first movie, I can go in there and I can be blown away by the effects and just, but I'm blown away by the relationship, the whole dude, you know, is Jeff Bridges Flynn or the dude, or is that the same guy? You know, it's just that aspect of, you know, it's so cool and it's so interesting. But I swear to God, these kids, and I call them kids because they're born 30 years later than I was, but they don't know. My niece, my little niece, she wants to see this movie. She knows nothing of Tron. She hasn't seen anything of it.
Right,
you know?
Right.
And she does want to see it.
It's very hard to, when you're bringing a movie back after this much time, to one, be respectful and entertaining to the original audience, the people who really saw the first one, and at the same time bring something new and bring something different to a younger audience that, without, you know, depending on the history, and still make it compelling. And they, yeah. man, they just hit it out of the park, in my
yes.
opinion, with this
yes.
legacy. They did a great job. Great job.
They definitely did that. They definitely did that. And it's amazingly cool.
So, was it pretty? Do y'all like the way it looked?
Oh, come on.
Come on.
That's an easy one. Was it pretty?
I want my room to look like that. Are you kidding?
Darn right.
I love it.
I'm getting the keyboard. I'm getting the mouse. Screw it. I'm going to put blue lines on everything, man. I love it.
I missed Master Control's interface. Even back in the 80s, I had that big black table, you know, with the touch screens all embedded, it was cool. So the fact that they still brought that in, you know, that they had that now.
I love the fact they were doing that in 1982.
82, that's great. That's right, man. It's a giant iPad.
My favorite, one of my favorite lines from the movie is, he goes, yeah, it's the... world's changed a lot. It's a lot of Wi-Fi. He goes, Wi-Fi? He goes, yeah, it transfers data. You mean between machines, electronically? Yeah, I had that in 85.
Yeah, that was awesome.
That was cool. That was amazing. It's like if Flynn had lived, he had lived in a real world, he would have ended up being Bill Gates. Bill Gates' abilities with Jobs' style.
Yeah. Didn't that look like an Apple store gone crazy? The whole movie.
And by the way, no, it did not look like an Apple
store.
Yeah,
it did. I mean, some of the modern lines.
No. White and Apple stores are clean, open, and white. This was dark, black, and
yeah, I know. That's why I say it. Apple store gone crazy.
It's like the infected kryptonite Fortress of Solitude Apple store. That's what it is. Take that, geeks. Ha ha. There you go.
Wait a minute. Hold it. Let me get back on course. We went far off on that the geek attitude.
No. We were just discussing how it looked. Like all of the other special effects other than the thing were just beautiful. The light cycles were gorgeous. I love the way the how they rode them, and you know, they stayed true to the old film with it I guess trailing with the light behind them, and then they made the new jets that did that.
I was a little shocked by.
Shocked good.
But it was flying. Oh, look, they're flying. Oh, wait a minute, they're running into jet streams behind those planes.
Yeah,
yeah,
it was pretty.
Yeah,
pretty.
it was cool, but I don't know. I didn't like those from the first movie that much.
Oh, they were in the first movie?
No, not the planes. I mean the trails.
I love the trails. That's like
I like on the grid. They're active on the grid, but they're not active off the grid. You know, they went through they escaped the grid, and then they didn't have the trails, which I thought was okay.
Yeah.
But yeah.
What about the plot?
I'm sorry, what?
That is the proper response to that.
What?
What was that?
There was a
It was definitely sort of a candy kind of film. I mean, from an artistic standpoint, it was spectacular. They were respectful to the old, and they brought in something new. But in terms of the plot that was going on in this film, it was a little flimsy.
Like, what was flimsy about it? What exactly?
Well, just the entire plot.
Like, okay, so the guy, he's, you know, it's 27 years. Like, okay, what?
Okay, this is my point. The main idea is the guy receives the page. He goes to sit in his computer. He turns on the laser, and he gets zapped into the computer. And from this, you want logic.
No, well, listen.
That's what I'm saying. I mean,
to me, this movie was a lot more entertaining than the first one. I know, shoot me down. You know what I'm saying?
No, you're right. You're right. I agree. Of the two, this movie was much better. Uh-oh.
Crickets, man. Now we feel like we're just going to be like, oh, man. We're stepping on
some... What's that soundtrack like?
I give extra credit for the original movie for vision. That's all I can say. The heavy hand of Disney in the original one. I mean, there were hand-drawn animated sequences in the original Tron where I'm going, come on, is Goofy coming out next? So I could feel that. I could feel the campiness of old-school Disney in the original one. The original one was also a little slower, but at the same time...
And it didn't make sense either because...
Oh, it made sense.
I'm mad at my lawyer because he won't let me play games after hours, and so I'm going to go
and... He invented the game.
Yeah? I just watched it.
Dillinger stole his software is why he broke in.
Oh, okay.
That's why he was so mad. No, let's see. The original...
the MCP stole software, but let's not talk about that.
True, that is true. That is correct. So, but then again, you know, we're not sure about that. Because remember, MCP only started grabbing code later. Dillinger had locked off the code for Flynn and some of the other stuff. Dillinger got promoted, and then MCP went rampant.
It was always my impression that he, like, there, everybody, apparently in the old days, everybody just ran their own projects, including Tron.
It was an overarching
security program to monitor and run everything on the grid.
That's right, because it was a mainframe. It was a mainframe, yeah.
As we know. But with probably less RAM than I have in this machine right here. It was like a heavy-duty piece of security programs that Alan was just writing on the weekends.
We're going to let that go, because he had the hacker's instinct. No, seriously, because what had happened was... The Master Control was the operating system. Master Control Program was the operating system.
We're getting really geeky on this one.
Getting geeky, and I'm about to cut y'all short.
Okay, all right, wait.
But I want to hear.
The operating system, MCP, ran between the operating system. It ran the I.O., it scanned all the programs, and it threw everything over to Zark, who took it and went with all the torture the programs and put them on the game grid and everything.
Yeah. Yeah, Bizarre was just a scheduler. Yeah. MCP was Master Control, though. Even though he had gotten, 2,417 times smarter, was Dillinger's program, because, look, it was Dillinger. It was Dillinger.
Well, we know that, yes.
Yeah, but anyway. All right, so...
Okay. Y'all have gotten that out of your system.
This is what happens when you get too...
But no, we do have to compare the two, because we went into the new game or system, whatever. The whole reason What's-His-Face got trapped inside, Flynn got trapped inside, is because Clue was told to design the perfect system, right?
Perfect system. That's right.
And then they went into some stuff about the isomorphic blob. What is it?
The isomorphic code. Yes, the isos.
Right.
Yeah. What the hell was that? Because he started explaining isomorphic algorithms. And what is that? Like, I still never understood why they were so...
You okay, try it first, and I'll go.
Yeah, I know this one because I like AI. No, let me qualify it this, however. One of the things that I thought was a little inconsistent about this movie, and my friends, we all picked it out right away. Tron Legacy is like watching anime. All right, it was like live action anime, but particularly in terms of the flow of the story and the plot. Haven't you noticed, especially if you're watching something like Appleseed or one of those other animes, that you have these monologues where people are talking about something, and you know it's important, right? You know, they start using these keywords where they're throwing stuff together, and you're going, oh, that's really important. But you have no idea what it is that they're talking about.
Oh, okay, because like, I thought I was the only one that felt that way, because I don't know. That's new. That wasn't in an original movie. What is this for?
Basically.
Wait, hang on, let Carl finish.
Okay,
when I'm watching anime and I see them, you know, going off into why the AI is so important or why the balance of the city has got to work with the magical powers, I keep wondering, I said, is there a language barrier? Did something get lost in the translation that I'm not getting? Are these people just pulling stuff out of there? You know, so what's happening?
Yeah, pretty much.
So I'm
yeah.
watching this, and it happened time and time and time again. Like, when Sam is in there in Sam's shack house or whatever, and Alan comes and he goes, your dad wouldn't have left you. You know, he was going to change everything. It was genetic algorithms, quantum teleportation, Bigfoot. You know, he just started throwing words.
I love that voice he used. That's awesome.
So I'm like, wait a minute. So, okay, so what happened? They would do that in just about the time when they were trying to explain what the MacGuffin, what the key technology, right. whatever. It would degrade into these freakish keywords. And I'm like, look, that don't make no sense. Y'all just, So this is my spin. This is my interpretation using what I know about machine intelligence merged with the...
Well, hell, if you don't know, and you interrupt robotics and shit, you don't have a chance.
This is what I think is what they meant by the ISOs. So the idea is when you write a computer program, when you sit down and you're working on a program, you have full control over how things are executed. You think you know what the sequence of operations are going to be. You know what's going on, right? And that's how most programs are written now. But there's a whole new area of programming. Genetic algorithms is probably the best example, where you create a space, you define the rules, but inside of that space, with randomness, with chaos or whatever, you allow the computer to interpret its own spin on the instructions that you give it. So you give the computer a certain degree of flexibility. You don't know what it's going to do in that space. You have a framework, you've got a ballpark, a cage that it's going to occur in, but the computer can sort of riff a little. It can randomly put stuff together, and what emerges out of that space that you've created is a unique new solution. All right, so that's a genetic algorithm. I can get more detail, but anyway. So what happened is, what he's claiming is, he's created this wonderful complex world. It operates with rules just like the Matrix. All that stuff's great. He's created programs, and he's building the system as he expected the well-constructed, orderly system to be. But inside of that space, little hiccups, a little randomness started to occur, and they created spontaneous new programs in the world that he created. These programs right. were not what he designed, but they emerged out of the system that he made and had personalities. They had a little spirit. And so it was like, for him, in his cool 60s retro hippie kind of way, he was describing, wow, you know, it's like these new entities emerged out of the ether that was great. I'm just channeling the man, you know, is that kind of thing. And so these programs came out of the orderly structured world he created, thus creating the dichotomy between what Clue and what Flynn and Alan were creating, which was a well-described program world that they had anticipated, to the beautiful serendipity of what the ISOs represented, which were this beautiful emergent new software. So Clue,
and then how were they supposed to cure cancer now?
Yeah, that part is where the Bigfoot comes in, because all that. I could respect the magic of, you know,
I think that theory is, and this is how they're using these sorts of programs now, was gene folding and things like that, where you have a list of variables that you know, and you put them into this program, and then, as you say, the machine intelligence interprets we want this as an this is the input, we want this as an output, and the computer looks at how these two things are related and goes, oh wait, these link together, oh wait, these link here. And it's doing it so fast, it's a very simple program, and it does it so fast, it looks instantaneous.
And the other thing is because
it's going to work.
There you go. I mean, this exists. What you're talking about is I've used this technology before. You know, genetic algorithms.
Oh, so her coming to the real world? See? Are they supposed to like hook her up to a machine or sample her DNA?
Wait a
second.
Number two.
I was just, you know, listening to it and listening to what they were saying, and then I just like, you know what, I'm gonna get past that. They were just, you know, some pretty people. They were original people, and then they got, you know, what's
purged
the word? Yeah, they got purged. And so that's just what I'm gonna take away from that, and I'm gonna leave all the other ISO blah blah alone.
And that's fine. And that
I think that's what everybody did.
The idea was supposed to be, like I said, my guess is, I'm not talking about bringing them into the real world stuff. That's a whole nother MacGuffin. Within the context of solving the problems of the world, I believe that, okay, once you've got computer programs that can solve problems in unique and innovative ways, you can apply that to a lot of different problems. So that's what I
think that that's a bad thing that he needed to destroy. And then if he's supposed to make the perfect system and they're the bad thing that he needs to destroy, why is the perfect system Gladiator Games?
Because the ISOs take random data and assign it to and fix it and, you know, go, oh, and solve problems with random data. Computer programs take data in and get put input output. They interpret data and it goes out. They're very primitive compared to the abilities that these ISOs have. So
They look chaotic
when compared to this perfection of linear programming.
That's pretty close to my take too, because remember when they were creating the universe, it was Clue, it was Flynn, it was Tron Allen. So what's happening is, you know, they're trying to create this well-described rules of an environment, a world. It's very complicated. They gotta, you know, do compilations and whatnot to have rogue programs sparking up and doing things that are outside of the anticipated outcome. Now Flynn could appreciate the beauty and magic of that because he's not of the program, he's outside of that, and he could change the rules that he had defined. But remember,
the
as
ultimate
he told
ISO.
Him, he told him repeatedly, he told Clue repeatedly, you know, I didn't know at the time that I created you. I didn't know the rules I didn't know what was coming. So what I gave you was an incomplete set of instructions. Clue could never vary from his initial program.
Exactly.
Clue was doing what he was told. He was just trying to maintain order in the universe as Flynn saw it at the time that it was created. But these ISOs were a magical thing that emerged. Flynn respected it and was curious about them. Clue saw them as a violation of system perfection, took them out. That was
That's great. That's some great, good stuff. Do you think this is why people didn't like the plot? Was it too, did it try to be more than it was and then got chopped? Because it sounded like they had more information in there that they wanted in the movie, but somehow it got cut out then.
That's what I feel, because that's why I said it's like anime, where you hear, they threw out the right buzzwords. They were saying the right stuff, but they didn't quite go far enough to link it together to make it smooth in the story. I mean, like I said, I'm drawing from stuff I know from AI to be able to complete the picture of why.
Yeah, but not everybody is smart as you.
I'm not as smart as him, and I know this.
I put it together as to, like, okay, some what if he's saying is not important, so I'm going to tune some of that out and just take away that, you know, perfection, chosen, got slaughtered, we have the last one, she's the chosen one, we're going to, you know, protect her, protect the ring on his back, which had all of the information, which I didn't, you know, get the mechanics of anyway, but I just took it and
this
ran
is
with
your
it.
Data disk, it stores everything that you've seen or heard. It's on your back. Everything.
Fine, but it still is like, I don't know.
Open the disc, it's got all the...
Wasn't it in the original game? It was just what you've done in the game?
No! It was never that. Well, no. It was, you know, No, it was not.
It was the memory in the source of the program each time. Right. But what I thought was interesting is these programs could read the contents of the discs before. Okay, excuse me. I'm talking about Sam and Flynn. All right, yeah. When Clue picked up Flynn's disc. I mean, when Clue picked up Sam's disc for the first time. What do we see? Sam on the road on the Ducati before he even got in the Tron. Well, remember, the seamstresses hadn't even given him the disc yet. Wait a minute. How far back does this disc go?
I didn't get that either. Why could they?
See, I think it's the whole concept of this disc is you. Lose it.
Yeah, but he went through like everything that we've seen so far in the movie, and then that was it.
Yeah, before he even got in the Tron world.
Yeah,
That was just a little inconsistent. I'll let that one go. But here's the one that I had a problem with. I mean, Kat, what you're talking about is, like I said that there are like holes and inconsistencies. These little things, like you're talking about, why were ISOs so important? I always believe that the bad guy, or that the main arch nemesis, has got to have a sense of plausible peril. All right, something really bad's got to be here going down. right. So let me ask you this. Riddle me this, Batman. So Clue assembled this massive army. He's got his light aircraft carrier. He now has Flynn's disc. How is he going to get them into the real world?
They're going to go into the light and then do whatever Sam and Cora did.
Yeah, right. So, which is something I'm still not entirely clear. Was he going to fly an aircraft carrier full of thousands of people out of a laser beam in the basement of an arcade and come into the real world?
No, I thought they were going to get, and they were going to line up and march to the thing, and one was going to chew, and then they walk up
one
to the light.
One at a time, an army of
you're just trying to figure out where the aircraft carrier came in.
I will even give you, say they were going to line him up. He had about 4,000 people. Can you imagine 4,000 glowing people coming out of the basement of an arcade?
In that room? They never get up those stairs. Are you kidding me?
I'm sitting here going, wait a minute now. You know, I know that Clue's the bad guy. He's put together. He's really cool. Because, you know, all bad guys have to have a synchronized army. So, you know, the synchronized light army, that means you're really bad.
They animated those great, because they was like, oh, we just have to, you know, make things that we're not going to, you know, get all up in their faces. They can all do the same thing. I was like, oh, man, that's so lazy.
And he randomized those things.
Yeah. It was like blowing Helm's Deep all over again. You know, we're going to come get them. So I'm sitting there going, well, okay, now how are these people going to get into the real world?
I just explained it to you, dude.
I don't think that's impractical.
Or maybe he was going to make a large beam and we just never got to see it because he got
scorched. How in the world is he going to make a large beam?
He was going to make like a big, you know, a big beam.
A big beam. They have not clearly, in my opinion, they did not clearly define where the heck, how Cora got into the real world. To me.
Yes. See, that's because, the thing. They never.
Well,
see,
then
that, and that is my big.
Because they reversed beamed.
I'm with you on the reverse beam. That's how Flynn came back the first time. But think about this now. When Sam shows up after, you know, the Tron light, you know, he put the disc in there. When he shows up, what? He pops out. He's in the basement of the arcade. He's got his little USB drive around his neck. He's thinking about, oh, wow, all of the wonderful things that I've seen.
USB
he turns. He walks out of the basement.
How many goes K with that
there?
He's still stuck on it.
Let's give it time now. Okay, hey, what's up, Alan? Alan is waiting
half bag, half gig.
Alan is waiting for him in the lobby. He's like, so what'd you see? You know, he's like, oh, man, everything's going to be different. You're right. You were right about everything. Walks outside. Cora's chilling on the bike. Now, wait.
Change of clothes, and she's outside already. So,
did she walk past Alan, or what? You know, what? How did Cora, where? So I'm just trying to figure out.
Oh, God, yes. I knew something was wrong with that scene.
So, I mean, I was chilling. And so what? I was so worried, because I'm looking very carefully. I was looking at Alan. The scene where when Sam and Cora ride off in the bike, Alan walks out and he turns and looks at them. I was so worried that Cora was like a figment of his imagination, you know, because he had the memory stick around his neck. Maybe Cora was with him virtually. So I'm trying to figure out, does Alan see Cora what was going on there if she had actually come out, because I just
well maybe she walked past and that's why Alan was asking the questions like what happened,
you so know wait a second
he, because, wait, wait, because wait, at the wait. Beginning so, if you realize him and Alan hadn't quite been in contact. I mean, Alan even asked, did you have a girlfriend? Sam didn't quite answer. So this could have been his pre-girlfriend before time, and she walked past Alan, get out there, hang out by the bike, and then Sam come out, talks to Alan, is like, what's up with that? What's going
on?
What
could have been happening is, to Alan's perspective, Sam could have just been getting busy in the basement, right? He just could have been bringing a girl with him into the basement of the arcade, and then he just comes out and he's like, hey, what's going on, man?
That's not what I was going to go for, but, you know, it could happen.
Well, my point is, you see what kind of discussion we have? This is what I mean when I say they're missing pieces. Why are we discussing?
I hope no one involved with the project.
Hold on. This is my thing. We've been talking about Dillinger.
Sam Allen.
Dillinger. Yep. Dillinger. Dillinger.
He's the guy in the first movie, right?
He's the bad guy. Okay. He's evil person.
He's all the bad people, actually. He was all the bad guys in the 80s. He was in Time Bandits. I love that dude. Yeah.
Ultimate Evil. Come on, he's amazing.
Yeah, he was.
So anyway, he was the
prepare to launch the logic probe.
Silent, you. Silent.
I love that. Anyways, so his son, who's the Joker.
Scarecrow.
Yeah, that was him.
I was like, dude!
Mike had nothing to do in the movie except for those two lines.
Oh, you guys are killing me. He was
That's one. Two, you got Clue and Flynn merging in the alternate reality, you know, in the game, on the grid.
At the end, you mean.
And then three, you've got Cora she's in the real world. So this, to me, tells me one thing. Sequel.
See, don't forget, Tron never died. That's the other thing. Tron, at the end, he's in the water, and he flickered from red to blue, and so now he's good again. Listen, I would love to see a sequel to this, but that is something we'll say that again.
Okay, one more thing. Yeah. I could not help but think when I was watching the club scene. Matrix. Mm-hmm. I mean, they had the British guy. It was like the Merovingian.
Ziggy Stardust Merovingian is who that guy was.
It was totally Matrix. And I was like, this feels like Matrix. And Matrix felt like some of the Matrix films felt like Tron.
Yeah. So this it's
a
almost
copy of a weird.
It almost is.
And that a lot of people were complaining that this felt too much like the Matrix. It's kind of what I liked about it, save the scene with the Merovingian, the faux Merovingian guy.
Yeah,
British Pee Wee Herman. With
Hold on. No, that was Michael Sheen. He's been in a bunch of movies, and he looked entirely different in those movies. But the best part about that scene. Daft Punk.
You
come
got
on.
It.
Everybody's been raving about this soundtrack.
I love the soundtrack. I picked it up on Amazon. It was like $6. Oh, yeah, extra tracks in it. Oh, go
nice.
Get it. Run.
Nice.
Yeah, I of course, you know, when they started syncing the music with the fight scene, that was kind of fun.
Yeah,
the DJs are just chill the whole time.
They dive with the club or something, or
I think that's the new idea of don't shoot the piano player. Don't mess with the DJ.
They're just
change
supporting
around.
The
background. Change
good guys
the mood,
and bad guys. Yeah, and bad guys and good guys like background music, so no one's gonna kill the DJ.
So
Will, you talk about memory. Now here's something else to ponder. All right, here's something else to ponder. One thing that I think is interesting, given the time difference between the original Tron and this one, is with the exception of the opening scene, which I think we can all agree was so, you know, independent of what really went on with the story, there was almost no mention of the internet in, you know, what was going on in the real heart of the story. You know, there was that little leaked code at the beginning. But think about this now, all right? The computer that scanned Flynn and Sam, the computer that rendered the entire world of Tron Legacy that we saw and that we went inside, is circa 1989 technology.
Yeah.
It was
even
not
advanced. Even it, the yes, most even advanced computer advanced. Of that time is now a pocket calculator. I mean, my iPod Touch has more memory and more capacity than those computers have.
Okay.
That machine was not connected to the internet, and as evidence, so it had to page a dude to
use it.
All right. So, we are rocking a mainframe in the basement of an arcade, not connected to the internet, 1989 right. technology.
But so there is no internet.
At best, they were rocking what? 2 gigs of storage, entire maybe, world yeah,
storage,
of
storage, not online storage.
Exactly. That's long term storage here. So I mean, look, you got ISOs, you got Flynn,
well,
you
just
got
the fact, Sam, just the fact.
3 gigs of storage here in the basement of an arcade.
Now hold on. Just the fact that Flynn or that Sam took that data and uploaded it to his phone.
Thank you.
He uploaded the entire thing to his phone.
Wait. Maybe it wasn't the whole thing. Maybe it was just his dad. Maybe it was just his dad, you know, that he put on. But the point is still.
I thought the whole place got blown up.
No.
Well, he exited with the disc, so he took everything that Flynn
because when his dad, he did the open his arms, and then Clue came, and then, dude, I mean, y'all saw that. It was like the poltergeist at the end when the house...
The disc had everything that Flynn knew on it. So he took the disc with him. So we don't know how much Flynn knew. We don't know what the, quote, storage capacity within the 2-3 gig realm of Tron is. We don't know what the storage capacity is. But he took with him everything that he needed. So I don't think it was the whole universe that fit on that disc. But it is the mind of Flynn. So
when I was watching Tron as a young boy, I was watching literally the first time I saw the movie. Mm-hmm. Ram is dying. And he kind of hugs him and gives him power.
That's right.
I literally, in my head, I went, well, of course, he's in protected memory because, you know, his circuits are isolated and are pumped up by the computer. He's not a program. He's a user. So that's an entirely different thing in
that's
my
right.
head at the time. So
that's right.
I don't discount that anywhere. Or at any point.
So, are you trying to say that Jeff Bridges would be back for the next movie?
I think so. Well, let's put it this way: there's an option. I don't know that there's a contract, but there is certainly an option.
I know what's gonna happen. What's gonna happen. Somebody's gonna fall out of favor somewhere, and they're gonna make a direct-to-DVD Tron, and that's just gonna suck.
No, that is not. Don't even joke.
That's my biggest nightmare. They're gonna put it on Sci-Fi Original. Then it's gonna be a crappy TV show. Then they're gonna cancel it.
It's gonna be like the sweeted version of it with cardboard and cellophane. You know.
Okay, maybe I shouldn't tell you guys this.
Go ahead. Come on, we gotta know.
You know, there's a series, right? There's a cartoon animated three-dimensional series coming out next year.
Of Tron?
Yeah.
What?
Tron, oh, what? Cartoon Network or something?
Tron Legacy. Yeah. Disney's doing it. It's going to be on the Cartoon Network? It's going to be on the Disney Channel. Are you kidding me?
Okay. Well, I wasn't thinking. My lips were moving. My brain was off.
Okay.
My bad.
Yeah. And there might be, I don't know, a Marvel comic at some point.
Well, look, I mean, I don't mind the secondary stuff, but
as long as it's not canon.
Right.
Apparently, most of the stuff in the flashback was in the original Tron 2 video game, Tron 2.0 video game. So it's pretty much canon. The flashbacks to the whole thing about the ISOs coming in and and all that stuff. Apparently, that was in Tron 2. Like video game.
Gotcha. 2.0 video game. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So they're not calling. That's why they didn't call it Tron with a 2 with a missing the R.
Gotcha. Oh, okay. Yeah, I saw that. Okay.
Because it's actually Tron 3 if you want to get technical about it.
Well, second movie.
Yeah. I still think it's amazing. It was a fun film. Yeah, and it's like I really liked it because it was cool to be able to, you know, right before the holiday to go, hey. It's a fun, interesting, good movie to see. It's great. It's perfect.
Yeah.
And like I said, I nitpick about the plot because I think there were some missing pieces that could have, you know.
What was that?
That's just what we do. We're nerds, we're going to do that.
Yeah.
But what's fun is there are these really cool moments that, you know, you can pick them out and they were like, okay, like here. This is
There were more than three.
Yes. Yes. There were many.
Yeah, more than three in the entire film, and it's a good movie, as far as I'm concerned.
Here is my absolute favorite line from Tron Legacy. My absolute favorite.
All right, can I guess?
Go ahead.
You're harsher, my Zen.
Good. That's close. That's close. That was a really close second, man. I love that. Whenever Flynn was being himself, man, he just nailed it. He made it so feel so real. Okay, but okay, that's close.
Right,
that's
right.
A second. Here's my favorite line in Tron Legacy. Yeah, that was it.
What's that from?
Yeah, what is that?
Here is where that line is from. User Flynn, is it true that I am to create the perfect system?
Yeah. I remember that now.
I love that freaking line.
Flynn was there,
it just went off the rails at that point, right there.
There were several spots in the storyline where a couple shots, and I will call them Lasseter shots, where, you know, Cadmel and Lasseter came in and saw the film and they said, well, try this. Let's put these scenes in. And there were a couple shots in the movie that were these scenes, but they were cool. The whole thing and most of them were on the Solar Sailor. But the thing about the Wi-Fi and, you know, there's more about their relationship, kind of develops their relationship a little bit more, I guess it wasn't in the film, and that would have definitely changed the feeling of the film overall. Wouldn't have changed it from a good film to a bad film, in my opinion, but, you know, it needed that. It needed more of that, actually.
Oh, okay.
In my opinion.
Whenever we talk about, you know, sci-fi, I'm always talking about you got to feel a connection with the characters. There's got to be some. And those moments that were sprinkled in there, Flynn particularly. But, you know, the other thing, casting of Sam, the guy who played, you know, Sam, he felt like Jeff Bridges' son to me. I mean, he felt right in terms of he had this slight snarkiness, but he didn't go too far over the edge. He had this sort of, you know, everyman feel to him. I thought that was kind of cool. So I liked his character. I loved old Flynn, you know, rocking the hippie. He nailed it. Of course, if you imprison a hippie inside of a computer, he's going to go to meditation. Of course he's going to go there. I mean, he had the beads around his arm. I thought that was great. But here was something else I thought was really cool about Legacy. It was the use of sound and silence in this movie. Mm-hmm. Here is the best example of their constructive, artful use of sound. And it just jumped out, the use of silence in this movie. That jumped out in a way that it hit me at the moment. So, okay, the kids have left the house. You know, Flynn and Sam, they're out in the street or whatever. And Clue and his crew have broken into Flynn's home. And they're walking around the, what do we call it? The 2001 Fortress of Solitude. They're walking around there.
Hey, and it's just the floors and the walls.
The furniture had feet. But anyway, Clue is picking up the bit, you know, the art pieces. He had the two bits that were sitting on the desk. He's picking up the bit. And at that moment, you don't realize that it is dead silent. Everything's just perfect. He's thinking. You can tell he's thinking about the connection that he had with Flynn. And then, Baldy sidekick knocks over the candlestick.
Yeah,
right?
Just that was good.
The clash of the sound of that and how funny that was. And it literally just knocked you out of because he was deep in thought. It's just silence in the moment. He's looking at the bit.
And then bam, he's
and then they turn to Baldy. He's like, oh, my bad, sir.
Let's get on with this.
Long live the users.
Yeah, he was not a trustworthy gig.
No, he was not in the least. A little windy, a little blown with the wind there, slightly. But I loved everything about the performances, but let's talk for a second about 13. Olivia Wilde. 13 from House, where she was originally.
Oh, okay.
She is amazing in this part, I think. Am I getting good? Any responses to that?
She was likable. I enjoyed her character. I think she was underutilized, though.
Always Trinity.
I'll say that.
So Trinity. Well, she was lighter than Trinity. She was much lighter than Trinity. She had a silly, playful innocence.
I loved her
Loud. Yeah.
See, the thing that got me about her and her performance was the small bits of it, you know?
Yeah.
Small pieces that were used in the piece, but in her approach to it, in her development of it, she definitely did things that I found, you know, unique. The whole thing about Vern, what's he like,
that was so funny.
It was so, yeah, but it was
I think I was the only person who laughed, and I don't think anybody else thought it was funny. Rolling.
Wow, really? Yeah, they kind of got it. Okay.
Yeah.
she did that very well. I heard several different conversations with her, interviews with her. And her whole approach to it was very, you know, there was an almost religious aspect to it, which I thought was really cool.
She played it well. Absolutely. She had a reverence for Flynn. You know, you could tell she was like, Flynn.
Oh, yeah, yeah, exactly, yeah.
Twinkle.
Yeah, yeah, and she played that. Her laugh, she just exploded in an inappropriate and kind of weird laughter, but it was appropriate to a being that didn't necessarily have things that were funny happening in her existence, I thought.
Yeah, something tells me hanging out with Flynn for, you know, thousands of cycles probably was not a laugh-a-minute experience.
Carl, when you were talking about Sam was the perfect guy, perfect cast, all I kept thinking when I was looking at the guy was, like, he seemed like the second runner-up for Kirk in Star Trek.
New Kirk. I could see that.
I was just like, yeah, this guy lost that part, because he looks like he had that same type of, you know, gung-ho vibe to him or whatever. And I didn't, in the trailers, I didn't think I was gonna like him, but I ended up liking. But I kept staring at him, and I couldn't quite figure out in his face what made him attractive. So he must have like personality or something. But I mean, he has a hotness about him and he wore that suit well, the Tron suit, because, you know, most men probably can't put a suit on like that and, you know, not have a little gut or a little, you know, not have the
fact
right.
That they didn't have a cameo of Tron guy in here clearly, you know, that this is not authentic to the original. If you don't have to do with hand-drawn lines on him in the motion picture, it's clearly.
I have a thing about that, but my thing about, you know, the clothing was
beautiful.
They laser scanned these people to make this clothing, you know that, right?
Oh no.
Yeah, they laser scanned them. So like a 16th of an inch on your body was too much. You know what I mean? You couldn't, if you just couldn't get into it. And you couldn't, and the also we realized that the lines, quote unquote, which were in the original just black on white lines, were in this movie light sources.
That's right. That's right.
They actually put electroluminescent wire into the things, and everybody had a battery pack.
I was wondering
about that, because somebody made a costume. I'm gonna say who. For opening night, somebody made a costume and looked kind of awesome, and he had to carry a battery pack as well. So I was wondering about the battery packs in the
Is he in the room?
Yes, he is. I don't know if he wants to be revealed or anything, but you know.
Okay, I was gonna say, I went to the opening show, you know, 12:01, in the IMAX. I got there two hours before the movie started, and that was about 4 hours late.
Yeah,
I'd say about 30 to 50 people in the group had costumes on.
What?
Swear to God, there was this one guy I was talking to. I think his name was Ryan, who had. He took a coat, and he put on a shiny luminescent tape. So if you hit it with a light, it would glow. So everybody was taking photographs of him. It was really cool. And he just had this thing, he had, like, you know, down the arms and, you know, across the thing, and it was really cool. And then there were two girls who had full on, let's say Olivia Wilde, you know, Quora inspired. Costumes, and they had everything except they had backpacks on, and on the backpack they had the disc, which I thought was cool. And it was just, there was a guy done up as one of the Daft Punk guys, But he wasn't committed because he took his helmet off. And I'm like, dude, don't take your helmet off.
That breaks the whole.
If you're going to be Daft Punk, don't take your helmet off. It's a thing. And it was an explosion of creativity. It was amazing, the stuff they had.
That's not bad. That what you described is not bad.
So if someone had a costume for an event like, oh, I don't know, maybe the grand the opening of what would that entail? He wonders.
Let's just say hypothetically. Forget the hypothetical. I'm just gonna come out and tell you what happened. Is I had planned on going as a Tron character for Dragon Con.
Okay.
But I could not get my resources, the money, and the equipment together in time. I was trying desperately. So what happens, first thing I bought is the electroluminescent tape.
Right.
So I bought that stuff. That mess is like $20 a foot. All right? It is crazy expensive. And it comes just like you imagine, in big strips. Long,
you get that
long,
from Home Depot or something?
No, ain't no Home Depot got electroluminescent. You have to contact, there are a couple of companies online that you have to buy it.
Like three or something.
There are three of them. That's right. And so it took a little longer for me to get it than I anticipated. But that wasn't the challenging part. The challenging part is to get electroluminescent tape shaped in a curve or some sort of a pattern. It has to be, you know, set and machined to do that, because otherwise you just get straight strips. Well, the most definitive thing about the Tron costumes and characters is the rings, is the little rings that you see, you know, the circuit board rings.
Mm-hmm.
So I contacted a company to say, okay, look, can you make me a ring? I need this ring fast. And the guy's like, well, I don't know. A ring, what shape? Give me the internal, outside, external diameter. Man, I don't know. And I was getting close. I was getting tired. I said, well, you know what? Maybe don't worry about it. He says, well, let me ask you this. I said, yes. He said, this sounds kind of like a project I was working on a little while ago. Have you ever heard of the movie Tron?
Oh, crying out loud.
I said, I'll take 12. And so I bought my discs from the same guy who made the costume stuff for Tron. So I was like, all right, I can write
stuff. Hold on a second here.
So, what happened is...
Oh, my God. No, just flip over all the cards on that one. You won, man. Let's move on.
For the opening of Tron Legacy, I have a black trench coat that I lined the collar all the way down to the base with a band of electroluminescent tape, on my shoes, on the side of each of my shoes. I had the single ring from Tron, and my sleeves, just like Jeff Bridges, also lit up.
Question.
So, I also built... Yes.
You built what?
I also built a disc that lit up.
Well, of course. You have to do that. I have one question. You're on Flickr?
Yeah. I'll see if I can find something.
You have to have a picture of
it. At least put it on a mannequin or something, or lay it out, or whatever you gotta do, because I want people...
Get somebody to take a picture of you in your damn costume. Maybe that'll work.
There were a couple of people that took pictures of me at the event. A whole bunch of people that took pictures of... Well, okay, but here's the other thing.
Dude, Tron guy at movie costume. I mean, how...
Possibly, okay. I think it would go... Cool Tron guy.
Nerdy geeky guy.
Hey, if they're there at the movie to see the movie, that's not gonna happen.
They are gonna appreciate it. Well, see, that's what I thought, right? So I get there. Now, my assemblage is literally soldered onto me because I've got wires and things coming out my pants. They're going, I got my battery
cord,
transformed from my hip. I mean, it was just nuts, all this stuff. I had an alligator clip keeping the power on.
Yes, hello.
I walk into the theater. No one is in costume. No one is there.
Oh.
What's this?
Come
that's
on,
embarrassing.
Come here. Come San Diego.
So, listen, look, well, because like I told you, I didn't have... time. But hang on, let me finish. So I get to the theater, you know, I walk in and I get a couple of awes, you know, when I came in, because of course my shoes, my jacket's lighting up. People hadn't seen the movie yet, so they didn't know what the deal with my collar was. But as the movie was ending, with the credits were rolling, the front row lights up. The people in the very front.
Oh!
And so I just wandered right down next to him. I sat down. I said, not bad, not bad. Pow, and I turned mine on. They're like, ah! Oh, man. So we all took pictures as we were leaving the theater.
Amazing. Yeah, amazing.
I was rocking the old Flynn. They were like, it's old Flynn and new Flynn. Yeah, I was rocking the old Flynn. The
cool.
I
had, amazing.
That's nice.
Yeah.
I say bravo to you, sir. Bravo.
Thank you again. Tweet that in the VideoScape 3D. We're bonding, Will. We are bonding at a techie level.
VideoScape, we get the lightwave thing. It's very cool. Darn. I feel it. I feel you.
Oh, God. Let me break up this love fest. So, overall, we're feeling good on the Tron film.
Yes.
I like the film. It was fun. It was fun. Like I say, it had some holes, but overall, it was so much fun. Little parts popped up. I enjoyed it in different levels. Tron was great. I've seen it twice.
You think the critics that are talking crap about it should just shove it, right?
Well, I don't know. I mean, you know, they seem to be... It takes so much more effort to hate it than to like it. But they seem to be out there.
Really? I mean, are you being a hippie? Are you being serious? It takes so much more to less energy to smile than it is to frown. I mean, come on. That's not. Do they have a legitimate gripe?
It's digital. It's digital jazz, man. You got to riff with it.
You got a thing.
Yeah, I think you're right there. It is very likable. It was very fun.
Mm-hmm.
Had a lot of action in it, a lot of adrenaline. It was pretty.
It was pretty. It did have
the plot made, you know, enough sense to, like,
yeah,
you know.
There was enough. There was definitely enough there. And the other thing I have to mention about the plot is we didn't work that out beforehand.
Oh, you mean didn't know where it was going?
No. I mean, you know, having seen the movie, I didn't work out that explanation until just this minute when we were talking about it.
Oh, what, the ISOs?
Everything. The ISOs and everything. So it's not like there's, you have to have, you know, there's all this heavy plot you have to get into. Or even the backstory, which we were talking about. But we can go into it and we can go, oh, look, it works like this and this works like this. And, you know, there's enough of it is explained that if you are watching it, you're fine with it.
Yeah.
So, you know, there was nothing in there that was distracting in that reasoning.
Have you seen it in 3D?
Yeah, both times. IMAX 3D.
Yeah.
Oh, crap. 3D. Did you see it in 3D, Will?
I saw it in IMAX.
I saw it in IMAX.
Yeah, I'll probably see it in...
I want to see it in 3D because I only saw it, you know. And the theater I went to, their audio was messed up. Again, and then they had, like, when Sam was riding on his motorcycle, they came, we have to adjust the audio because blah blah, so we didn't get any audio through the motorcycles.
Serious?
Or whatever.
Oh my, you didn't see that movie.
And then the motorcycle chase at the beginning in the real world.
Right. Oh,
so okay. that's and then after that the audio was fine. But I'll have to see it again because they ruined my experience.
I saw it in an IMAX screen, 3D. I turned around before the movie. My buddy turns around. He goes, look at those speakers. They have like the big surround THX IMAX. Mm-hmm. They are actually like 5 feet tall and hanging from the back. So let me tell you, when it was silent, it actually absorbed sound out. And man, when the those recognizers flew by, man, it about threw us out.
I love those sound effects.
So 3D is definitely worth it. Not like maybe like Airbender or anything.
No, it's not. It's
not full 3D. It's not full 3D. It's
no. 2D. The real world is more or less 2D. Did you get that weird, you know, this is, you know, sections of the movie are in 2D, but we just suggest you keep your glasses on? You get that?
Which
is a little weird.
It was weird. They had a little cursor comment at the beginning of the film that, you know, only part of it is in 3D, but still leave your glasses on.
Yeah, and that part of it is like 90%.
So
little beginning, little bit at the end, whole middle of the picture.
Yeah.
Since
yeah.
3D. But
is it like Avatar?
Avatar. It's definitely like Avatar. Because it's
saying
was
I
shot
experienced.
3D. You haven't experienced the film.
And I even liked it. Wow, that's going to be a step up for me. I'm excited.
You didn't have 3D, and you didn't have good sound. You've only seen a third of Tron Legacy. Seriously. You got to check it out.
Oh, it was just the beginning. Hot. The theater was all miserable. I'm going to go again and have a better experience.
Do you have a good theater in Serial?
No, this is the good theater. They should have a bad day. Man, it was having a bad day.
No, wait, no, yeah. That's just no.
Okay, well, we're just yapping now, guys. Thanks for listening. You know, that's our show. We love your feedback. Give us a call, 773-336-2686. Go to our website, leave a comment at scifipartyline.com. Tweet us at scifipartyline. We're on Facebook. Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed the show, and we'll see you at the party next time. Goodbye, programs.
End of line.
End of line.
Nerds.
I am not a nerd.
I am a geek.
The computer, an extension of the human intellect. The ENCOM 511, center of the most calculating intelligence on Earth, programmed by Master Control to survive by all means. Soon, the ultimate tool will become the ultimate enemy.
I still do not understand why you want to break into the system.
Because, man, somewhere in one of these memories is the evidence.
Hey, 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 it's the big master control program everybody's been talking about.
Kevin Flynn, computer genius. Taken prisoner and held captive within the digital world of the computer itself.
End of line.